Greetings from the Talking Information Center, located in beautiful Marshfield, Massachusetts. This is your reader, George Krein. The center was closed yesterday, so my plan today is to do lead articles from Gloucester Daily Times from Monday and Gloucester Daily Times today. From yesterday's edition, city taking fresh look at I-4 and C-2. $50,000 state grant to pay redevelopment consultant. It's written by Bobby Grady. Gloucester has received a $50,000 state development grant to hire a consultant to create a redevelopment vision for lot I-4 C-2 at 65 Roger Street. The grant will allow the city to bring in Zapalac Advisors, a real estate and economic development firm, to lead the process. What to do with the last city-owned waterfront property has been the subject of debate since it was filled in the late 1970s. According to City Council President Tony Gross, various proposals such as an inn, a mall, and others have all come and gone, but the site remains unchanged. It is currently being used as parking and as a place for commercial fishermen that dock their vessels and store gear such as lobster traps. One of the challenges with redeveloping the site is that it is in a, quote, designated port area, end quote. This is a state designation that protects the waterfront properties and mandates they be used for water-dependent purposes such as fishing. Gross said because of the designation, the redevelopment plan could not displace the current water-dependent uses. This is just revisiting the site, seeing what the current uses are and what needs to be done to make it fit within the designated port area, he said. Gross said other challenges with redeveloping the site have to do with the, quote, constant one-foot wave coming in during the summertime. It's not totally protected, but it's not totally exposed either. Attempt made to settle Atlantic Path issue. It's written by Stephen Hagen. Rockport. Efforts to resolve the question of whether a seaside path at Andrews Point ought to be accessible to the public may be closer to resolution. On Friday, the interested parties met in Massachusetts Land Court to consider a possible settlement of a lawsuit that has vexed residents and a local homeowner who wants to limit access to the path near her home. The meeting is requested by the Commonwealth to have discussions aimed at reaching a settlement, said Select Board Chair Paul Murphy. By late Friday afternoon, Murphy said the discussions were continuing, but that no formal decision had been reached. According to Amy Quessel, an attorney with Boston law firm KP Law, the Friday meeting in Land Court was, quote, confidential with all materials impounded as ordered by the judge. KP Law represents Rockport. The situation has included involvement by a number of groups, including attorneys representing resident Elizabeth Fisher, a local group that has long maintained the right to walk the Atlantic Path, town officials, select board members, and Kendra Kinsherf of the Massachusetts Attorney General's office. Efforts to reach Fisher were unsuccessful before deadline Friday. Ali Zuliana, Deputy Press Secretary for Attorney General Andrea Joy Campbell, declined to provide comment on the situation. For years, a group of Rockport residents, friends, and family members have taken Sunday walks along the coastal path next to the home owned by Fisher at 18 Long Branch Avenue. But their walks eventually were met by signs that were erected indicating the pathway was out of bounds. For his part, Murphy said the town of Rockport will remain engaged throughout the process and is committed to keeping the public informed as information becomes available. He added the town will continue to be represented by town council. Our attorneys from KP Law will be there to advocate for the town's position, Murphy said. Rest assured that we are taking this matter extremely seriously. The town intends to fight the Fisher case to the very end, using every resource available to us. Everyone involved is taking this matter seriously and acting with the responsibility the situation deserves. Gloucester resident Brenda Malloy often walks the Cape Ann Pass adjacent to the coast. She pointed to the deed that she said provides for public access to the path that crosses Fisher's property at 18 Long Branch Avenue. I feel like the public is losing more and more access to our shoreline, she said on Friday. I feel like the property should stay public access and that it shouldn't change at all. The public should have unwavering access to the public path. In March 2023, about 100 people who want to keep the Atlantic Path at Andrews Point open to the public got together at Rockport's Wendover Center for the Performing Arts to meet with and hear from Ken Scherf, the Assistant Attorney General. Ken Scherf is overseeing the matter with advocates of keeping the walkways open to the public, providing documentation that shows the path has been used through the years, including prior to the 1950s. She has said her office has already collected more documentation to show the path's public use, including testimony and old photographs that have been gathered from the libraries in Rockport and Gloucester. Select Board Member Ross Brackett said there are essentially two lawsuits, one against the town regarding two public paths on the property, and another arguing that the deed provides for the coastal rocks path to remain open to the public. In my view, it is fair to characterize the plaintiff's action as an attempt to limit public access to the coastal rocks on the property, said Brackett. Brackett said he generally does not support settlement discussions for the case. If the state does come to a settlement, my understanding is that any agreement would need to come before the select board, he said. The issue has always included input from the town's right-of-way committee, which has worked to foster access to the public paths in Rockport since 1989. The Andrews Point Path is part of the Atlantic Path, which runs along the northeast coastline of Rockport from Halibut State Park to Cathedral Avenue. Report urges lawmakers to fix, quote, broken textbook system. It's written by Christian Wade, State House reporter, Boston. Massachusetts college students are still struggling with the cost of textbooks and other course materials, according to a new report that calls on Beacon Hill leaders to provide more financial support. The report released last week by the Massachusetts Public Interest Research Group's Students Action for Change found that while colleges are expanding access to free and, quote, open educational materials, the effort is being undermined by billing practices such as requiring access codes and automatic billing that are keeping costs high. As a result, course material costs continue to take a serious toll on students, many of whom report skipping meals, dropping classes, or working extra hours just to afford the books they need to succeed, the report's authors wrote. The Mass PIRG student groups surveyed more than 4,000 students at Massachusetts colleges and universities last fall and found that 1 in 10 received free textbooks or other course materials for their classes. At least 75% of the students surveyed said they were required to buy access codes for course materials and assignments. Only 36% of 16,000 college-level classes the student groups reviewed provided free textbooks and other materials to students, according to the report's findings. The financial barriers created by the high cost of textbooks isn't, quote, incidental, the report's authors claimed, but a systemic issue that decision makers should address through policies that prioritize affordability and a fair marketplace. The report's authors recommended that the state legislature provide funding to schools for free and open textbook programs and implement safeguards to ensure that commercial course materials and billing contracts don't lock students into models that undermine affordability and access. Universities may think they're providing convenience by streamlining, centralizing, and automating billing, but they're often exacerbating students' financial hardships, MassPIRG's Students Organizing Director Leanne Cole said in a statement. While students may get course materials faster or easier, there's no guarantee students get what they pay for when everyone pays a flat rate, and more content than ever is supposed to be free. Over the past three decades, the average tuition for both public and private four-year colleges and universities has doubled after adjusting for inflation, according to a recent report by the College Board. In the 2025-26 school year, the average tuition and fees for full-time undergraduate students at a private four-year college was $45,000, $1,750 higher than the year before. Meanwhile, the average cost of in-state tuition at a four-year public college was $11,950, $340 more than in the previous year, the report said. Recent studies suggest that decades of declining financial aid support is putting many public college students in debt. The state has cut state financial aid by 47% since 2002, according to data, while other states have increased it by an average of 15% per student. Meanwhile, federal assistance for students is dwindling as the Trump administration seeks to roll back Biden administration policies that sought to make it easier for students to borrow and repay college loans. Beacon Hill leaders have been focused on reducing the cost of public higher education, with reports suggesting that rising tuition costs and a lack of financial aid are putting a college degree out of reach of many students. A 2024 state law provides free tuition at community colleges for those 25 and older who meet the basic eligibility requirements. Massachusetts resident undergraduate students with a family-adjusted gross income of $75,000 or less can attend any university campus tuition-free under a law that went into effect in the current school year. And wrapping up the front page from yesterday's Gloucester Times, local author launches biography of heroic veteran and pastor. It's written by Gail McCarthy. When Rockport's Stephen Law first read about the death of the partner of Reverend Robert Wood decades ago, he reached out to inquire if the grieving pastor was open to a pastoral visit. He was. Although they were strangers, Law left that meeting with far more than he ever imagined, a spark of curiosity that led to a six-year effort to write the biography of Wood, a decorated World War II veteran and a pioneer for gay rights. Wood had survived a bullet that went entirely through his chest and a deep bayonet wound in the Italian theater. But the fight for him would never end, because Wood was a gay minister at a volatile time when homosexuality was denounced. "I went to visit Wood as a pastor and left there as a writer," said Law, reflecting on that first meeting. The book, The Story of Bob, The Life and Times of the Reverend Robert W. Wood, published by United Church Press, Pilgrim Press, will be launched February 17th and already has received praise from reviewers who call it a story for the present moment. J. Bennett Guess, executive director of the ACLU of Ohio, wrote the foreword to the book. When the manuscript was finished, in spite of its pioneering content, it was not an easy sell, and Law has a file full of rejections for the book. "I began sending it out, and religious publishers said it was too gay, and mainstream publishers said it was too religious," he said. The details of Wood's life pour off the pages as articulated through Law's narrative. Wood, 1923 to 2018, died at the age of 95, and Law knew him for the last 15 years of his life. "We inhabit this world for such a short time. Any idea that improves our character, helps us live and love fully, is a good thing," said Law. "Maybe reading The Story of Bob will help us all discover ways to love well and discover home." Law's biography carries with it Wood's stamp of approval. The book was finished years before he died. He commented on each and every chapter and was involved in all the editing, said Law. "He signed off on the factual and emotional accuracy, and I had that confirmation as a writer, which I really valued." The New York Times obituary spotlighted Wood's life of advocacy and acceptance for gay people. In 1960, Wood published the groundbreaking book Christ and the Homosexual, which the obit described as a rare plea by a gay clergyman for equality at a time when local and state laws criminalized the sexual acts of gay, lesbian, and bisexual people, and churchmen condemned homosexuality from their pulpits. However, Wood did not come fully out as a gay man until after he retired. Wood had been in a long-term relationship with Hugh Coulter, who lived from 1919 to 1989, a former rodeo cowboy and artist, but fearing professional reprisals, the two were selective when and where they shared the news. They lived in separate residences, visiting each other when they could. Law first learned about Wood's relationship with Coulter when he read about Coulter's passing in the United Church of Christ bulletin. Law felt empathy for Wood, who was living in Concord, New Hampshire, within driving distance, and he reached out to see if Wood would like a visit. "The whole time I was with him, he talked about his love for Hugh," recalled Law. "He seemed to have lost a lot of regret about their choice to live apart, the lost opportunities to express affection and be together. At the time of that first meeting, Law had taken up writing short fiction and was in a writing group led by C. Michael Curtis of the Atlantic Monthly. Before Law left that initial meeting with Wood, who was nearly 80, Wood asked Law what he was doing with his life in retirement, to which Law told him about his writing and his relationship with Donald Stroud, with whom Law spent 45 bliss-filled years. In fact, Wood would later officiate their wedding in Rockport the day after Massachusetts legalized gay marriage. When Bob heard those details, he asked if I'd consider writing a book to honor his love for Hugh and chronicle his efforts as a pioneer in the gay rights movement, said Law. Law discussed the possibilities with Curtis, who encouraged this effort, but with caution, knowing the challenges of getting a book published. On his next visit with Wood, the interviews began, a process that went on for years and supported with details from Wood's diaries and sermons. I took notes of all the people in his life and the churches he served and the institutions he served professionally and socially so I could reach out and talk to them about their experiences with Bob and their memories so we could create a legitimate memoryscape, said Law. This book helped Bob to come to terms with his life as a soldier, pastor, activist, and lover. It helped him to recognize the pride of heroism and accomplishment and forgive himself for his failings. It became a catalyst for him to come out of the closet after Hugh was dead. It would take more than 15 years for the book to find a publishing home and for Law to hold a copy of the book in his hands. Now moving to today's edition of the Gloucester Daily Times, group to plant 50 trees downtown. It's written by Bobby Grady. The Gloucester-based nonprofit Biomimicry New England's 400 Trees Program, as it's called, is set to plant 50 trees downtown beginning this April and into May. A recently secured state grant of nearly $100,000 will not only cover the cost of planting the trees, but it will allow the organization to hire a professional landscape firm to plant and maintain them for the next 2 years. Biomimicry New England began as a way to educate students and adults on the importance of trees, nature, and the climate, according to co-founder and executive director Peter Lawrence. But when the COVID-19 pandemic ended its work in schools, Lawrence created 400 Trees. Program aimed to continue educating and engaging people with nature, but also to celebrate the 400 plus anniversary of Gloucester in 2023. In order to do so, Lawrence had the idea to plant 400 trees across the city. Between 2023 and 2024, the program worked with the city and local agencies to plant 400 small trees in parks, cemeteries, schools, and even on people's lawns to commemorate 400 years of Gloucester. Now, 400 Trees is the major project of Biomimicry, Lawrence said. This most recent proposal is the organization's second such project. Last year, it planted 17 larger trees near City Hall, Sawyer Free Library, and the post office to help combat high temperatures in populated areas. According to Lawrence, downtown Gloucester is known as a, quote, hot spot, meaning that due to a lack of trees, temperatures are 10 to 13% warmer than a part of the city that has trees. The shade provided and the respiration done by the trees cools the area, he said. Once the additional 50 trees get planted, Lawrence said it should make the area safer, especially for Gloucester's elderly population. When it's already 85 or 90 degrees, you're pushing up into an unhealthy situation, he said. Since its creation, 400 Trees has expanded to more than just plantings. Lawrence said the program has been working with elementary schools in Gloucester and Rockport to teach the kids about trees and nature. Lawrence said he has plans to work with middle school students as well. Beginning December, the program's monthly tree talks at the Sawyer Free Library to educate adults on trees and nature as well. This next talk is scheduled for Thursday, February 19th. That's the day after tomorrow, from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. at the library at 2 Dale Avenue. High Court denies condo plan appeal. Conservation Trust Town considering options. It's written by Stephen Hagen, Manchester by the Sea. The Essex Superior Court has denied an appeal by a local conservation group to overturn a previous ruling that backs the development of a 136-unit condominium complex at Shingle Place Hill. The court last week rendered the decision to deny the request to overturn a Massachusetts Housing Appeals Committee judgment against the Manchester Essex Conservation Trust's efforts to thwart construction of the, quote, sanctuary at Manchester by the Sea condominiums at Shingle Place Hill. We're disappointed by this ruling. Patrice Murphy, executive director of the Manchester-based Manchester Essex Conservation Trust, said in a message sent to supporters, "We are reviewing the decision with our legal team and remain committed to protecting our environmental resources just as we have for 60 years. Our resolve remains undaunted as we consider our next step," she said. The Essex Superior Court ruling follows a hearing held by a Superior Court judge in early December on the trust. A local so-called 10 persons group and the town of Manchester by the Sea's challenge of the previous ruling by the State Housing Appeals Committee, which overturned a decision by the town's Zoning Board of Appeals. That denied Needham-based Strategic Land Ventures, the developer, from building dozens of condos at the site. Strategic Land Ventures proposal to build at the site has been contested at the state and local level, with questions related to efforts to satisfy the need for additional housing in Manchester by the Sea pitted against the desire to protect abutting tracts of land overseen by the MECT. I would say that we were excited but not surprised by the Superior Court's decision, said Jeff Engler, managing partner at Strategic Land Ventures. The previous two legal decisions indicate that the facts of the case are on our side. Engler did not respond to a question about what the decision means in terms of the project actually beginning, but he did say company officials were planning to continue discussions with the town and interested parties. "We remain fully committed to building this project and look forward to communicating with the town and other interested parties in a meaningful and positive way as the process continues," Engler said. Select Board Chair Ann Harrison said town officials, including Town Administrator Tony Barletta, are, quote, "investigating alternatives." "We've been talking with our town attorney about that," she said Monday. "Tony and I think this development is not in the best interest of the town of Manchester. We're considering our alternatives." State to use AI, artificial intelligence, to better government. It's written by Christian Wade, Boston. Artificial intelligence is being used for everything from guiding self-powered cars and developing life-saving medicines to powering online search engines that help you find a plumber or pick holiday gifts for your family. And the machine learning platform, that's known as AI, could soon be employed by the state government to speed up the processes of getting a state permit, renewing a vehicle registration, or detecting fraud in public benefits programs. The Healey administration announced Friday that it plans to deploy ChatGPT's artificial intelligence in executive branch agencies with the goal of making state government work, quote, "better and faster for residents." "This is about making government faster, more efficient, and more effective for the people we serve," Governor Mara Healey said in a prepared statement. Her administration said the AI rollout will be implemented as a phased approach across the executive branch and provide a safe and secure environment that protects state data. The contract with ChatGPT was negotiated through a competitive procurement process, officials said. Once deployed, as Massachusetts will be the first state to adopt the technology for the entire 40,000-employee executive branch, according to the Healey administration. The rollout of the new policy comes as state lawmakers are considering a myriad of proposals aimed at adding guardrails around use of the new technology. One proposal would require large artificial intelligence technology companies such as the online chatbot, that's the agent for using ChatGPT, to register with the state attorney general's office and disclose information about their algorithms. Another bill calls for banning, quote, so-called deepfakes or computer-generated manipulations of a person's voice or likeness using machine learning to create visual and audio content that appears to be real. The technology is being used to generate fake imagery for anything from revenge porn to political mudslinging. In 2024, Attorney General Andrea Campbell sought to tighten the reins on artificial intelligence developers, suppliers, and users, issuing new guidance that warned them not to run afoul of the state's laws on consumer protection, anti-discrimination, and data security. Last week, the House state House of Representatives approved a pair of bipartisan bills setting new restrictions on the use of artificial intelligence in political campaigning. The proposals would require campaigns to disclose the use of AI in political ads and ban, quote, deceptive communications in campaign ads 90 days before an election. ChatGPT, which was created by San Francisco-based OpenAI, an artificial intelligence research firm co-founded by Elon Musk, allows users to enter themes, prompts, and guidelines into the AI system that comes up with a response as if a human wrote it. On its website, the company says the ChatGPT bot is a safe and useful AI system that interacts in a conversational way with users, making it possible to answer follow-up questions, admit its mistakes, challenge incorrect premises, and reject inappropriate requests. But the emergence of AI technology has been steeped in controversy, with critics warning that Congress and state governments need to move quickly to set regulations governing its use. Healey administration officials say the rollout of ChatGPT will be done within a, quote, walled-off, secure environment that protects state data and ensures that employee chat inputs do not train public AI models. They said use of the technology will be governed by existing state regulations and policies, which will be regularly updated, say officials. By making ChatGPT available to the state workforce, we're empowering our employees with a secure, governed tool that can enhance service delivery while maintaining the highest standards of data privacy, security, and thoughtful, transparent usage of AI. Jason Snyder, Secretary of the Executive Office of Technology, Services, and Security, said in a statement, "Our focus is not just adopting AI, but doing so in a way that reflects our values and strengthens trust with the residents we serve." Healey and AI trade barbs over ICE facility, turned by Christian Wade. Governor Mara Healey is exchanging cross-border barbs with New Hampshire Governor Kelly Ayotte over plans by ICE, immigration organization, to build a regional immigration detention facility. "This is outrageous and absolutely wrong move for New Hampshire, Massachusetts, and our entire region," Healey, a Democrat, said in a prepared statement. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of the Gloucester Daily Times. Have a great rest of the day.